So, hi everybody, my name is Roberto Hernandez. This talk is about MVC3 extensibility. MVC3, just because I'm going to be highlighting some of the new features in MVC3, but I'm also going to be talking about some features that are, let's just say, older features that were included in Release 1 and Release 2 of the product. The presentation is mostly going to be focused on walking through an existing application, like I mentioned in the slide, that has some quirks in functionality, so working application. So you might say that why modify a working application, but we are going to be able to improve it by learning some of the extensibility points. We are going to be able to gain some benefits from it. Like I mentioned in this slide, we're going to be able to create a code base that has a clear picture of separation of concerns, and a code base that's going to be easier to manage and easier to test. So having said all that, let me just state that most of the presentation is actually going to be code-driven. There is going to be a lot of code, so I'm going to try to fly through most of the demos. And the slides are mainly a guideline for basically what we are going to be doing through code. So let me just start the presentation by doing a walkthrough of the application we're going to be refactoring. And before we go there, let me just say that there are some pain points in the existing applications, and I actually list them in this slide. We're going to be, let me just switch to Visual Studio. So one of the first pain points I can think of, I mean, this is an MVC3 app, it's written in Razor, but as you can see, there's a lot of spaghetti code in the views. There's something that's not necessarily a good thing, especially if you work with a designer. So we might try to utilize some of the extensibility points around designing helpers for a viewer, designing a new view engine to actually improve this process. We're also going to be trying to solve code smell problems around our controllers. If we look at the current implementation of this person controller, you'll see that some of the methods are very verbose, and again, there's a lot of spaghetti code. If something do something, if something do something. So it's very tedious code, and it's code that we could probably mold into better functionality. That being said, if I run this application, good way to start. Let's see, let me remove this and launch again. If we start the application, it's a fully functional, as I stated in the slide, contact manager. Very lazy, it is a demo app, but it's an application that will allow me to create new persons. I can provide some basic function information about a person. Let's just provide this info right here. Say Hernandez Isaura, first name and last name, a birth date, is active, citizenship, create, that should take me to the previous screen, and I can associate contacts for that person. So if I wanted to associate a contacts, in this case, all contacts are email. Let's just say r@yahoo.com. I should be able to do that. And I should also be able to, and this is what I quote as fancy parts of this very basic application, get the information that's actually being rendered in this page in different formats. So even though this is a basic person action, I can get XML from this website rather easily. I can also, by following some of the other links, have it render in JSON, have it render in XML. And again, it's fully functioning at this point, but to provide that functionality, this is the JSON rendering. I don't believe I implemented the RSS rendering. There is a lot of if statements, a lot of spaghetti codes that we could probably improve by just learning a bit more about the capabilities of MVC. The other functionality that is one of the so-called fancy features is I can drill through on this report and actually visualize persons that were born in a certain date. My understanding is that this would have been a good feature for a sales department that wanted to send out birthday greetings on a specific date. But as you can see, if I click through, the URL that is used is very brittle, in the sense, not brittle, it's just ugly, in the sense that it has a day, month, and year parameter, so it's not very SEO friendly, it's not very human readable friendly. In a web application, we want our URL to be hackable. In this case, I don't think we have achieved that. So, having seen the application, let's go back into the content of, presentation. So, just to review, again, it's a very basic contact manager application. We want to solve the basic code smells that I identified, which is spaghetti code in the view, some spaghetti code in the controllers, or controllers are basically fat, which is a term coined by Jimmy Bogart, I believe, in the last MVC conference, where he did a presentation on fat controllers. And we also have a poorly designed routing strategy, which is not going to help for search engine optimization index. So, let's just go right ahead and learn a bit about ASP.NET MVC and how we can extend it. So, we have in a web framework. That is what ASP.NET as a framework is, and that is what ASP.NET MVC that sits on top of it is. So, from a web server functionality, there's always going to be the request response metaphor that goes around the whole process. Usually, our clients in most of the time browsers make a request to a server and receive a response, usually in the form of an HTML page. In the case of the ASP.NET MVC framework, the one who's going to be in charge of, let's just say, handling that request and providing a response is going to be ASP.NET MVC. And there's going to be a sequence of steps that actually are going to happen before the response is actually sent out to the browser. So, to walk that from left to right, the request is basically received by the HTTP routing engine that's built on top of the ASP.NET framework. That is handled by the, there's a routing handler in MVC that basically translates that request into a specific controller in action. That controller in action receives a model, which is actually provided by the value provider and model binder process. And that information is used to actually return a result. That result could be a view, which is usually HTML, but could also be content, could be a file, so binary content, could also be a XML file, could be JSON, like we just saw in the small demo. So we're going to want to plug in to different extensibility points all across this different pipeline. So from the point of view of the routing handler, we want to make sure there are routes, and we're going to specifically be tackling that birthday route, is as, I don't want to use the term pretty, but as useful, as hackable, as pretty as possible for our, the users of our application. We also want to be extending our controller to basically make our controller more efficient. We're going to be exploring how to build model binders. Model binders, again, is the way to get the data that is actually posted to the server or sent to the server into an actual object that's usable by our .NET code. We're also going to be talking about how to implement model validators to basically validate that information that's in our model and provide feedback to our users of our applications. We're also going to want to decorate the actions of our controls, and usually for action filters, what I usually like to put in action filters is usually those agnostic applications that are common to, let's just say, every single application that we build. So things like security, logging, caching, those are things that are intended to be built around an action filter. So finally, an action result, and again, the most common one used is the view result, which usually is what renders HTML to the browser as a response. The final point where we're going to be doing some extensibility is the view. And I quote again model validators because model validators play a role at the controller and on the view. From the controller, it plays a role of making sure that our data is valid, regarding certain rules. And from the point of view of the view uses the information provided by the model validators in the form of metadata to basically represent errors. We are going to be playing around with the concept of building a view engine, but it's mostly going to be an exercise to showcase that it is possible. So, let's just go ahead and get right to that process. And again, I'm going to try to go from left to right in the execution pipeline of ASP.NET MVC. So from response to request. But we might take a few detours because some things make sense to basically showcase at that point in time. So let's go ahead and talk about routing. What we want to accomplish with routing is that our URLs that are actually used to access our application are, again, human-readable, are search engine-optimized, and basically usable and pretty from a client's perspective. So there are many ways we can do this. The first one is actually by defining a custom route in the ASP.NET routing engine. Notice that it says ASP.NET routing engine because it's a routing engine that's basically part of ASP.NET, not ASP.NET MVC exclusively. We also can define custom route constraints, and those are actually going to be coming very handy in the birthday exercise. So I'll jump right straight into the code and start building that base route. Just to show what the before and after, what I'm looking for, if I click on this link, you'll see, again, the ugly URL that has the day, month, and year parameters, part of the GET request. I want to change that. I want to basically format this application in a way that I can pass in a value like this. In this case, I believe what I have there is month, day, year. And definitely, ASP.NET MVC provides a way to easily do that. If I request that right now, because the routing engine is not going to know how to translate that to a controller action, we're going to get this resource not found. But let's go ahead and try to code a solution for that. So, I am currently in the global ASX, which would be the right place to actually do this. I'm going to code this one by hand. This is relatively simple. So basically, let's call this the birthday route. And let's say that what we're going to have is a person birth date slash month slash day. And yes, this is a token base slash year. The third parameter in this equation, again, this is the name, this is the, we could use regular expressions here, but rather most people use tokens. So in this case, basically we're going to provide an anonymous object that tells it how to translate those tokens into values. So in this case, we just want to set a couple of defaults. Let's say controller equals person, that's not going to change, and action equals birthday. So compiling this, and again, this is on the register routes in the global ASX file, should actually serve the purpose of having that route within my routing table. That route is currently ahead in terms of priority of the default route. So whenever ASP.NET MVC is trying to build URLs for any action link that we build within our system, is going to try to find the route that is more appropriate for it. In the case for the person birthday, it's going to find, hey, there's a custom one that identifies and provides the month, day, and year parameters, which are backwards, right? Month, day, and no, they're right. So let's just go ahead and test this in the browser. It's currently compiled. And refreshing this should actually do the work. And voila, at this point we have a friendly URL. Now, if I go back to this page and I actually right-click Inspect Element, you can see that actually the URL that is being created for me in the view is actually in the right format. And that's where I say that the route that we added to the routing table, it's being used as priority number one to build a person.birthday route. All others, since they don't qualify in terms of the token, are built with the original default route. So the only thing that I can actually do now to improve this demo a bit is solve this scenario where we actually see something like this. Let's just say month 13. Well, if I provide a month 13, that's definitely not a valuable date. And I'm actually getting this horror screen that's telling me that. And we can actually improve this by implementing a routing constraint. So I'm going to go back to Visual Studio. And let me go ahead, and I have this folder here, infrastructure, for if you're going to be downloading my code later on, this is definitely the folder where the action is going to be. So I'm just going to add a folder called route constraints. And new item. And then going to generate this code for us. Oops. Even copy paste isn't perfect. Okay. And that's about right. Let me just show you the meat and bones of this class. That again, it's just a routing constraint, and all that we're going to be doing with this routing constraint is defining if a certain parameter is used, and I'm going to collapse this code so it's more readable. So I want to apply this date routing constraint in a certain way. I want to apply it for date, months, and year. I didn't want to build one for each one of those parameters. I wanted to make it reusable. So if when I initialize this date route constraint, I'm going to be setting up the mode for this constraint. I'm going to run this matching rule, which is not ready for production, but will serve for demo purposes. Basically, what I'm saying is, if the value in the parameter, if I have a value, and the mode is date, then it needs to be between the 1st of the month and the 31st of the month. This is obviously not going to work for February. For months, the same thing. It has to be between 1 and 12, January and December. And for dates, I was actually a bit liberal. I said it has to be between the year 1880 and the current year. So if I go ahead and apply this at the global ASEX file to the route that we have defined, and I'm going to take advantage of the code that I have already here. Apologies. Okay, there it is. So there we have the same route that we had before. We have it configured to be month, date, year. Again, controller person action birthday. The difference is this fourth parameter where we're actually saying the date has this route constraint property, and this is associated by convention to the date token. And the same thing for month, the same thing for year. And if I compile this and just refresh the page that we're currently looking at, now we see a resource not found. It's a different error. It's a valid error. It's basically telling us that it couldn't find a resource that matches that criteria. So one last thing, just because this is the best place to actually do this demo, I also want to improve the way the controller is doing this process. If we look at the controller's birthday method, it's taking in a year, month, and a day. And that is great, but we have logic in here to actually build the date and time from it. And we know that we already have a constraint on the route, so we are going to be getting a date in here. So why go through all that trouble? So my advice would be, why not take advantage of the MVC model binders and just go ahead and bind that using a custom binder. Let's see, I believe. Oops. That would be bad. So let's add another class. And in this case, again, we have a model binder. It's a custom datetime binder that I've actually pre-built for you guys. And the only thing that it's doing is looking at the day, year, and month route data values, and basically creating a date, time, year, and returning it. Now, there are several ways we can actually tie this to the controller. But for this demo, for time purposes, to basically keep the flow, I'm just going to go ahead and remove everything that we have here and say that this is a date and time, and the model binder to be used will be a custom, sorry, not a custom model binder. Custom datetime binder. And there we go. Now we can change this to date and time. And compile. So we're not going to be noticing anything in the front end, but it's actually an added value that our control of action is actually now more readable, more testable. Because now, when I basically pass this value down, the route constraint is basically helping me limit the values that are in here, and my action doesn't have the concern of actually taking that information and converting it into the date. The model binder is actually the one that's doing the responsibility. So, back to the slides. And just to review, this was this is actually a very fun part of the presentation where we actually do a bit of SEO optimization of the application and also do a bit of model binding. From now, we're going to be looking at the object that's key in the MVC process. Let me just expand the slides, which basically is the controller. And most of the things that are on the slide relate to MVC 1, 2, and 3, although there have been a lot of improvements in MVC 3 that actually make some of this extensibility points, I wouldn't say useless, but not as important. For example, Controller Factory was the traditional way that we used to inject dependency injection and basically inject dependencies into our controllers. That's not the case right now, and the same thing with Controller Action Invoker. Controller Action Invoker was the way we traditionally injected dependencies into things like action filters. Right now, that's not really the case because MVC3 allows us to set a global dependency resolver that actually would do the work for both. Obviously, we want to expand our controller in three different ways in the demo. We want to implement dependency injection or controller. We want to take away the responsibility of instantiating as dependent services, and we also want to basically build some functionality around it by using action filters and action results. So, I believe it's demo time, and the demo for the controller is three part. We're going to be basically creating the controller factory, and then we're going to be rolling into building action filters, and we're also going to be creating some model validation associated to the model that's being passed to the controller. And this is one of those that's really hard to place, the model validation, but let's go ahead and just go straight to the code. So this is the controller. This is the person controller. It's really the only controller in my application that's doing any heavy lifting. And the only thing wrong around this controller method right now is that it's instantiating the service that it depends on, the repository implementation, which is an iRepository. In this case, all that I'm going to do is refactor this so that the dependencies for this controller are actually being passed in the constructor. So basically, we're setting the controller for constructor injection. If I try to execute the application right now, since I haven't done anything to actually provide that I repository, I will get the no parameterless constructor defined for this object. I can actually correct that in probably two or three lines of code in ASP.NET MVC 3. And in the global ASX files, again, we are trying to bootstrap our application and make it ready for enterprise. It's where I'll actually be doing most of that coding. So I'm just going to go ahead and add a method, configure dependency injection. And I'm actually going to use structure map for this, just because it's the one that I know how to configure in two or three lines of code. Let me just go ahead and initialize it. This is the basic configuration for it. Let me just say that the only thing I need is for to have every request for an iRepository be filled with a repository concrete implementation. That should be it, except for dependency resolver, which is an MVC3 construct. At this point, there are two parameters, and this is definitely not the enterprise way of using the structure map. There are some gotchas in terms of using structure map with MVC3 that you should be aware of. So the code that is actually going to be downloadable actually has a production-ready implementation. This one's just going to be what I would like to call demo-ready. But set resolver, you can basically set it in three different ways. You can pass a dependency resolver implementation, an iDependency resolver, or you can actually pass in two functions that are actually going to do the application, two lambdas, which is what I'm going to do now. So for the first one, I can actually satisfy it with just straight object factory get instance. And the second one is a bit more complex, but also shouldn't take me a lot of lines of code. The second one is actually trying to get an enumerable of objects. So in this case, I'm going to request object factory, get all instances, object, and I'm just going to go ahead and say plugins where the type equals type, and I believe I can actually return this. Yep. So if I compile this, we should be good. And if I refresh my browser, the iRepository is now passed through dependency injection into my page. This is one of the major improvements in ASP.NET MVC. There was a lot of focus on getting dependency injection and extensibility easy to use within the framework. So let me go back to the slide just to make sure I am on the right track with the demo. So now I'm basically going to be building some functionality around the controller in terms of action filters. And as I stated before, most of the action filters functionality, as I like to use them, there's a lot of definitely debate and opinions about this. I like to use them to build functionality that's not necessarily exclusive to the business side of the equation of the system, most like agnostic operations, those things that we actually built into every application, like security, caching, logging. So let's go ahead and play around with that. And my first demo in that regard is basically going to be use one of the ones that's actually already in the system. So if I go to my person controller, and I have this birthday method, I can actually say output cache, and a specified duration for it. Let me just do a duration 15. That just means that that page is going to be cached for 15 seconds. So I'm going to have to be quick. So if I go to the birthday page, I should see only Marianela Hidalgo's right now. Now this information, because we're using the attribute, should be cached for the next 15 seconds. So if I go ahead and create a new person that's actually going to be added to our in-memory database. And added, if I click 1190, and I actually did it within the range of 15 seconds, and I'm too slow, it shouldn't have been there. But again, I'm not going to go back because of time, but 15 seconds, 60 seconds, whatever you guys want to do, that's basically how long your page is going to be in memory. So I'll go ahead and work with the creating a custom action filter. And the only thing that really comes to mind is building an action filter for login functionality, at least for demo purposes. So I'm going to go ahead and add a folder called MVC filters, where I'm going to add a class for a log execution attribute. And this log execution attribute class is actually using Log4Net, so I am going to have to go to my global ASX file and configure it. And it's all that it's doing, and I believe there's a typo in it. Yeah, it's here. All that it's doing is basically adding information to a file in the app data folder with the controller, action, and time it was executed. Very simple. So I'm basically going to go to my global ASX file, and let me just add a configure log4net. I actually think I have a shortcut for that. So filters. Yep, here we go. So simple configuration of log4net. I'm just going to go ahead and compile that and roll back to my browser and just click around a bit. So homepage. Oops, one thing I should have done. I should have added that attribute somewhere. And I could do exactly the same thing I did with this attribute. I could add it as an attribute directly on a controller method. But why not actually highlight one of the new features in MVC 3, which is global filters? Let me just go ahead and filters dot add new log execution attribute. And there it is. At this point, I should be able to click around. And get a couple of entries in that log. If I go to my Visual Studio Solution Explorer and try to peek into that app data folder, this should be here. And I should be able to edit with Notepad++ and see the different actions getting executed and basically logged. So we actually accomplished a lot with only a couple of lines of code there in our application. So I believe this concludes the part on action filters. The last part that's basically around the controller and that also bleeds into the views is related to model validation, and I want to do that before we do the one for action results, which is my favorite sensibility point. So model validation, we're basically going to create a custom validator for our application. If I go to the application right now and basically try to create an email for associated to this person, Marianela Giraldes, what I will see is that there are certain rules that apply to creating an email. The address field is required, and it actually doesn't need to be in an email format right now because I haven't configured that yet, but that's one of the rules we could actually enable. But I want to make sure that you guys learn how to configure a custom model validator that provides functionality both at the client and server side, which is actually something very easy to do in ASP.NET MVC 3. So let me show you the view model that's actually being used in that page. There's this email view model. That's all the view models are actually in this view models folder. And email view model has the, again, the address, and all that we're saying currently is required. But the one thing that I want to know, and this is just something I came up with to demo this model validation, is we might want to say that this email belongs to a certain corporate host name, sort of, in my case, excella.com. So if I wanted to do that, the simple way to do that is create a custom attribute for validation. So if I go ahead and create a class, and just give that name. And I already wrote most of the code. It's, here we go. We have this. Corporate email validator, and the important part basically at this point is the corporate email attribute, which basically just has a rule within it that says, hey, the last index op within the string has to be a corporate email. This inherits from validation attribute, which again will simply allow me to, and let me fix that file name just to be clean. So corporate email attribute, add it to the MVC validators. So, yep, that should be good. So, if I go to my email view model now, I'll be able to do something like this, corporate email, and I'll be able to specify Excel.com as the domain that of addresses I want to restrict that input to. Now, if I go back to my page, and in this case, I'm going to refresh just to get a clear view. If I type something like r@yahoo.com, it goes to the server and actually provides me the address. You should be a corporate email of domain excel.com, which we actually want, but we could do it actually on the client side. And it's actually very easy. Let me just go back to this code file. Corporate email attribute, again, inherits from validation attribute. And the only thing we need to do to actually tie this to a client implementation is provide a body class corporate email validator. This class is actually going to be inherited from data annotations model validator, and it's going to provide us the functionality to build client validation rules. The there's a very easy way to do this. You actually provide a enumerable of model client validation rules, and those rules are actually constrained by what's exposed in jQuery validators right now. So at this point, I'm basically saying, use the model client validation regex rule, which is the easiest way I found to implement this, and provide the same error message and just validate it using this regex. So if I need to do a bit more than compiling, if I go to my global HX file and actually add the adapter for model validation, let me add the register custom validators method to my application start. So associate the corporate email attribute to the corporate email validator. Now if I compile and go back to my page, let me refresh. And this is using the unobtrusive JavaScript functionality that Microsoft developed for ASP.NET MVC 3. So if I do an inspect element, you'll see that the data.val parameters, dataval.regex, dataval require, dataval regex pattern, all that is actually coming from my attribute is being rendered in a non-obtrusive fashion in my HTML view. Now, if I try to enter an address like the r@yahoo.com, I should get the error, but now on the client side. Now, if I try to pass an Excel address, this should be valid. So, back to the slides. Hopefully, you're seeing that there's a lot of places where you can actually plug in functionality, and there's a lot of places where you can actually improve your code base and make your life easier. So let's go to my favorite extensibility point, the action result. And it is my favorite extensibility point because it happens very late in the process. The most common action result is the view result. That's the one where we actually tell the MVC engine we want to create an HTML view rendered with a specific view engine. Usually this.view and passing a model does the trick. But there's so much more we can do with that. In fact, there's already a whole lot more built into the MVC framework for action results. We can actually return JSON content. We can return string literals by using content. We can actually return binary structures by using the file result attribute. So we can do a lot of things currently with the action results that are not constrained to simply going ahead and outputting HTML. So let's go ahead and build an action result that I would consider content-aware, an action result that's actually going to make my life easier around the implementation of code in my controllers. And the problem that I'm going to try to tackle is around the person controller, and its index. Again, this part of code just seemed tedious to me, because I'm saying, hey, if I receive a parameter that says I'm XML, output XML. If I receive a parameter that says I'm JSON, output JSON. And this just seems a bit tedious that I have to do all this time and time again, because this same functionality is built into the birthday action. But again, you can see there's a lot of ifs, there's three different exit points. It just doesn't seem right to me. So what I envisioned was, let's build a view result that I can actually use that is actually content type aware. And in this case, I'm not referring to the HTTP request content type. That would be a bit more of work than what I'm actually doing right now. But I'm actually going to stick to using this format parameter that's being sent as a get request value. And I'm actually going to build some logic to actually route to a XML request JSON or a view output. That's going to be my default implementation. So I'm just going to go ahead and create a folder for MVC action results, and going to go ahead and create a class. And this is basically it. It's the same logic that was in the controller itself. I mean, this is a smart action result of T, and the only method that's actually from the base implementation action result that we needed to modify was this execute result. And this execute result, again, is basically checking that format parameter. Am I requesting JSON? Oh, then you should convert that this result to a JSON result and basically output to the browser. If it's XML, oh, do the same, but this time with the content result, and make sure to map that model to an XML string before returning. For default option, and in this case, I'm just letting it fall through to a default option, it's just a view. I did add some additional functionality for enrichment. By enrichment, what I mean is, if you look at the JSON result right now, let's see. Well, you'll see that there's a lot of basically information here that's not intended for the JSON output. It's not really, it really shouldn't be there. So we got to make the information that goes down to the view actually just a raw data if we're requesting JSON or XML, or a view result that has additional information. And again, that's why I actually added some enrichment functions that, depending on the content type requested, you can do certain stuff with them. So having this smart action result and using it from our controller is rather easy. If I just go to the controller itself, and I'll just replace literally all this code right here. I'm going to keep this line of code, though. in fact, there's a big bug in there right now. But all those lines of code, I'm basically going to substitute with basically returning a smart action result. In this case, a smart action result person view model. And we're going to say there's only one difference. We want to enrich the default. So we want to basically say that if this is the default request, we want to provide a personal dispute model rather than the raw data itself. And it should be as simple as making this code. Let's see, what am I missing? And here's the bug. It was actually requesting data twice, and there's the data. What am I missing? Yeah, apparently there were more bugs here than I thought there were. So there it is. So again, if a request is for XML and JSON, we will get just the person view model array, but if it's not, if it's a default, we'll get the personal dispute model. And the beauty behind this is that this is actually something that I could carry over to any other method in this page. So I'll just go ahead and compile it and just re-execute this. And there shouldn't be really a visual improvement in the application right now, but now the code that's basically drives the this content is XML, this content is JSON, is actually centralized in a place where we can actually test and we can actually reuse in a very friendly manner. So let me go back to this page. There are, of course, other things we can do with this. For example, if you see here, the view format is actually a very nice format, and I'm actually going to add some extension methods. To actually make that possible. So controller extension methods. And these controller extension methods are associated to the controller and actually return the smart action result. So now the code that I'm looking at in the controller could actually become instead of this nightmare. Could be this smart result model. So, again, currently this is my favorite extensibility endpoint, and the truth about it is it happens so late in the process. You can do so many things with basically decorating, enriching the information that your controller has already delivered, that I think it's very, very valuable. So going back to the slides, and apparently because of time constraints, I'm not going to be able to do the final demo, which is around view engines. But let me just state the point that we could actually build view engines to make us to basically fit better the needs of our applications. In fact, there are many view engines out there that you should consider using in your application, like Spark, Enhamel, the built-in ones, Razor, etc. And there's definitely functionality also of extending the default HTML helpers that allow you to build a better view engine. And actually, I think I can cram up this demo in a minute. So the last one...
Roberto?
Yes, sir.
No, you also have a question in the Q&A queue.
All right, so let me just go ahead and, again, I'm going to make available the content on my presentation and the code for all online. I'm just going to go ahead and if you guys have questions right now, I believe this question was for the last presenter, though. Yeah, it sounds like this question was for the entity framework presentation that went on before this one. But
go to manage whenever you do that. It said ajax.actionlink. How do you define and update target ID to iframe and provide iframe source from action result? Sounds a little bit more like yours.
Well, the ajax action link. I mean, well, first of all, in MVC3, I'd rather you not use the ajax.actionlink functionality. I mean, you still can. You would have to by using the Microsoft.mvc scripts. But you could also do this straight up with jQuery. The update target ID, if I recall, is one of the overrides for Ajax action link. Let me see if I can actually trigger one here real quick. I'm using ReSharper, so my so part of the Ajax option, that's the last parameter of the action link, you'll be able to set the update target ID element. That's what I believe you can actually do in ASP.NET MVC 1 and 2. But my honest to God answer is, do not use the Ajax action link. Actually, use jQuery. Use the integrated libraries that now come, jQuery, jQuery 1.5, to build this functionality. That's would be the better approach going forward, I believe. So, just any additional questions?
All right. Well, thank you, Roberto, for your presentation. Appreciate it. And thanks, everyone else, for tuning in. I'm going to go ahead, unless anybody has a quick question, I'm going to go ahead and stop the recording, and we'll get Mitch ready for the next one. Anything? All right, guys. Thanks a lot.